Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Welcome back. It's 6:27:17. If you're listening to this the day we come out with this podcast, of course, you can listen to the podcast anytime you want. And if you do subscribe, thank you. A little over 50,000 of you do. So thank you for that. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast. This is Part B, our guest segment of the day. And we have a new book today. The reason I mentioned it was 6:27 is that's the day this book comes out, Fulfilled, by Dr. Anna Usom. She is a psychiatrist. And Anna, in addition to training at Stanford and Yale and NYU, so she's trained at obviously prestigious places, she wrote this book, which is essentially expanding my consciousness and hopefully yours. Anna, one of the chapters is Living Your Purpose, and you talk about a soul correction. Tell us what you mean by that and why going where your soul wants you to go is so important.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Michael. It's a pleasure to be here. And yes, my book, it's entitled Fulfilled, How the Science of Spirituality Can Help You Live a Happier, More Meaningful Life. And one of the parts of that is, like you said, the soul correction. So our soul correction is that thing that we've come to this world to correct in some way, shape, or form. You could know your soul correction by asking yourself the question, what has been the greatest source of pain in my life? And often the soul correction, it's that thing that comes up for you again and again and again, much to your dismay and chagrin, and despite your efforts often to change it. It's really kind of the lesson that your soul has come to this world to learn. In my book, I speak about four soul corrections that we all have as human beings to different degrees. And that includes improving our relationships, releasing our addictions, transforming fear, and harnessing personal power.
Now, the soul correction, so what I take is the hypothesis of the book, and perhaps of the background, is that we all have a mission or a purpose in life, and that purpose that whoever brought us here has for us is to correct something from our past life. Is that correct?
That's certainly, Michael, one of the ways to think about a soul correction. If people believe in reincarnation and have ideas of past lives, there is indeed that belief of the soul coming through many incarnations and having different lessons that it learns at every lifetime. And in this lifetime, it's supposed to learn these sorts of lessons. You know, there's even this concept called pre-birth planning, where your soul is believed to have chosen whatever challenges you have in this life and actually has planned, you know, the learning and the growth and evolution that you're going to undergo in the life that you have. So indeed, that's certainly one way to think about it. And, you know, you mentioned the chapter, Living Your Purpose. So knowing and identifying what your soul corrections are is one part of that. And the other part is identifying your soul contribution, which is what your unique set of abilities and interests and experiences and talents enable you to give to the world. And so living your purpose is a combination of living in accordance with your soul contribution and with your soul correction, like knowing those and living accordingly.
And now this affects our physical being as well as our mental being. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Mind and body are so connected. And, you know, there's been increasing studies showing that you can heal so many things in your body just through the mind. Just like you also can create so much illness in the body through certain kinds of negative thought patterns and negative beliefs.
So we should say that at the end of each chapter in the book Fulfilled, and it will challenge you if you're like me, Fulfilled, F-U-L-F-I-L-L-E-D, and the subtitle is How the Science of Spirituality Can Help You Live a Happier, More Meaningful Life. At the end of every chapter, there are exercises to do that help you attain, I guess, a higher life or a higher quality of life, if you will. And there's one on another chapter on improving relationships, and there's a chapter on releasing addictions. What do you mean by the word addictions in this case?
Right. Yes. So addictions, you know, it's often used colloquially, but and it's often used medically. It could serve both, you know, things. People can say I'm addicted to my iPhone, or I'm addicted to heroin. Two, you know, similar terms used in very, very different ways. So in my book, I use the term addiction to be anything to which we give over our power, whether it be a substance, and that substance could be drugs, alcohol, even certain foods like chocolate, or it could be a behavior. People have gambling addictions. People have sex addictions. People can be addicted to shopping. But I also include something that's not often included in addictions, and that's psychological addictions. People can have addictions to status, to power, to money, to achievement, to fame. And all of those are ways in which we externalize our power, and really, you know, it takes us away from who we really are.
So the addictions to, I guess, your... What I really wanted to ask was, can you be addicted to living your purpose?
Absolutely. That's a positive addiction. There could be positive addictions, too.
So I was going to say that I'm addicted, meaning instead of I love doing what I do, and I'm addicted to it so much I don't want to ever stop doing it, but it is an addiction to, meaning it's irrational how much I do it and how much I'm wedded to it. And I was wondering if that addiction, when does it become harmful versus just a positive addiction?
Right. And I think that's such an important question because, you know, it points to this idea of workaholism. To have work you love is the most wonderful thing in the world. It's so lovely that you've identified and started to live, you know, your life according to your passion and are helping so many people through that. And then the point at which it becomes maladaptive is if it actually starts to cause, you know, harming your life. If the more of it that you do, you know, if it starts to affect your family negatively or your health negatively, and when you feel that you really have a hard time stopping, that's kind of the fine line between what is something, a positive adaptive behavior versus an addiction. You know, someone can have a few glasses of wine, and it's been shown that a glass or two of wine with dinner actually helps your heart and your brain and your body. Having too much of that, in contrast, could really wreak havoc and have very dangerous consequences. So it's really a matter of degree.
And I wanted to get into, you do have a chapter on immortality, or what happens, in other words, when you see people near death, they seem to transform a bit. What's causing that transformation, and is it this, and what's the reach for immortality at that time?
It's such a good question, because indeed it's been shown a lot of people, you know, having a fatal diagnosis often improves the quality of someone's life in the remaining time that they have on Earth. That's been shown in numerous studies. Not for everybody, certainly, but for a percentage, I believe it's about a quarter or a third of people have this improvement. And it's a number of things. Sometimes in confronting death, you actually get a clear sense of what's most important. That's number one. Number two, your fear goes away. You know that you're dying. Suddenly the fear of death, you know, becomes much less real because life becomes so much more precious. So you're able to do those things that maybe you wouldn't have been able to before. And for some people, that involves a heart opening. They're able to rectify relationships, to have levels of forgiveness, to be able to say their goodbyes and, you know, have, you know, tie up loose ends. And then for people who are spiritual people, you know, there's a quote by Pierre Teilhard de Chardin. And that quote is, we are not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. So there's actually a lot of people who don't fear death. they realize it's just the next step of the soul doing what it's supposed to do. That here we have this incarnation where our soul is embodied in our current bodies, and then eventually the soul moves on while our body stays behind, which is a whole other perspective on death.
Now, I mean, there's so many places we could talk about because these are really profound thoughts and profound writing that you have, and that's one of the delights of the book is that if you want to spend a lot of time thinking about some very profound issues, this is a great book, and the exercises in it are wonderful. So one of the things that you talk about, and I want to get to the area of communication with departed souls and the other area of, if you will, the limits of medical science, but it is one that caught my attention immediately was the smell of death. So talk to us about the smell of death and what you meant by that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so the smell of death, it was actually said a little bit in jest, but then not really. It was based on, actually, this cat named Oscar and an article that was published about Oscar in the New England Journal of Medicine in 2007. So Oscar was the resident cat at Steerhouse Nursing and Rehabilitation Center in Providence, Rhode Island. Whenever a patient was about to die, Oscar would show up at their door and spend time with the resident and, in a way, pay his respects. So apparently, Oscar was a better predictor of death than any medical test. And the nurses learned this. And so as soon as Oscar would go to somebody's room, they would immediately call the family and let them know, okay, we think that, you know, you're going to, you know, your family member is going to be passing. And so Oscar got this reputation, and it was written up in the New England Journal of Medicine. And nobody knows exactly how Oscar knew or whether he saw some ghosts or some spirits or whether he smelled some sort of pheromone being emitted. Who knows? But it was just a very interesting coincidence. So that was, you know, what I meant by the smell of death. And in terms of contacting departed souls, it's very interesting, but I've had a number of patients in my own practice, which is a psychiatric practice, who've gone to mediums, who've gone to psychics, and who've had experiences that just blow my mind and blow their mind. I had recently a patient tell me he had his parents die in close succession. And he didn't even believe in mediums, but one day decided to go. And the medium knew nothing about him. And the medium immediately started calling my patient Fonzie, which is based on Arthur Fonzarelli from Happy Days. And it turned out that this shocked my patient because this was the name that his father, who had just passed, that was like his pet name or, you know, the term of endearment his father would use for my patient. And so this whole experience just melted away my patient's skepticism and made him much more open to these messages. So this is what the section on the smell of death was about.
And also, you talk about the limits of medical science here, which obviously is in this chapter on immortality, which I found very, very stimulating. Talk to us about the limits of medical science and what you meant by that and why you put that in this chapter.
Right. So the way in which we in medical school are often taught about death is death is something that you avoid at all costs. You're taught as a doctor how to keep patients alive, how to promote life, how to live a better life. But what you're not really taught is how to prepare patients for death, especially since death is all of our prognosis. Patients sometimes say to me, "What's your prognosis?" I say, "We all have the same prognosis, fatal. We all one day will die." But it's really not something that our society is, in a way, prepared for or prepares other people for. And it's different in other cultures. Not every culture has as aggressive of a system to keep people alive. And certainly the system has many, many advantages. And, you know, but it also creates this fear of death, which doesn't necessarily have to exist. And so that particular chapter in my book was the interplay about that. And it had some ideas by Atul Gawande, and a friend and colleague of mine from both Stanford and Yale Medical School, Paul Colonisi, who's done a lot of writing about this, and then some work from the Dalai Lama.
Now, let me go in and talk to you about your purpose. So by the way, we are talking with Dr. Anna Usum, a psychiatrist who's been trained at Yale, NYU, and Stanford, now practices in New York City, and the book is called Fulfilled, How the Science of Spirituality Can Help You Live a Happier, More Meaningful Life. It is for someone who is not exposed to this regularly, as I am not, it is a very, very thought-provoking book. And if I can drop the Dr. Usum for a second, and what do you think your purpose in life is? That is, what were you directed to do by your soul? I guess it's where's your most pain point, or what did you find, and how does this book help you?
In my life, what I believe I'm supposed to do is help people to heal and help people to elevate their souls, really. And it's interesting because that realization is something I came to later in life, way after I had already made the decision to be a doctor. And I went to medical school and I was doing, you know, all the things I was supposed to do, but a part of me felt somehow unfulfilled. And it was only by undertaking a spiritual journey which led me to ashrams in India, and Buddhist meditation, and learning about Kabbalah, and doing a number of other things, working with shaman in both South America and South Africa. It was through that process that I realized what my sole purpose was, wasn't just to be a healer and a doctor, but also to integrate spirituality into this process. So this is what I try to do with my patients and in my life, and also through this book.
And is this book, that this book must be part and parcel of what your, if you will, your purpose in life is. All of us who write books realize and have daytime jobs as well. It is a labor of passion. And so is this your passion?
Yes, writing this book has very much been. It's been a passion project on so many levels. I've always known that I want to write a book, but it was a series of synchronicities, including this lovely woman named Marva Allen, who, when I went to a writing workshop, took me aside and said, "You need to write this book, and I'm going to help you do it." And she did the best thing she could have done for me, which she gave me a book proposal example and a deadline. She's like, "Here, put together a book proposal for me." And then that, you know, started the process. And here I am a few years later, having written the book.
Congratulations. Today is the launch day of the book. If you're listening to this on the day we release this podcast, we release a news podcast for you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, every Tuesday at 7 a.m. on Radio MD and iHeart. And this book is Fulfilled. Do Anna and yourself a great favor. Buy it today. Buy it on Amazon, or buy it at Barnes & Noble, or buy it at your independent store, wherever you buy books. But that'll help Anna and help all the people who hear about it get more fulfilled. So the book is called Fulfilled, How the Science of Spirituality Can Help You Live a Happier, More Meaningful Life. Anna, thank you very much, and much success with the book and with your career.
Take care. Thank you.
And that's it. We'll be back next week, next Tuesday, a new You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. We have some great stories. I saw some of the stories coming out today. One of them, does washing your hands in cold water work as well as in hot water? And why running and jumping are actually good for your back. We'll talk about those in the news of the week next week. But for now, look up, fulfilled, and become fulfilled. Thanks very much for listening.